You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Wednesday, September 3rd, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, David Sirota, on his series of pieces on how taxpayers are funding the lovely marriage between politicians and Wall Street. Also on the program today, Chrysler sales booming. What was it that happened 5 years ago? Wasn't Chrysler supposed to go out of business and GM? Huh. Also on the program today, Antonin Scalia's death penalty poster person, exonerated after 30 years on death row. At Columbia University, a student protests the fact that her accused rapist, also accused by multiple other women, still remains on campus. Israel's annexing of 1,000 acres in the West Bank, roundly condemned. And I think we mentioned this yesterday, but Stephen Sotloff, U.S. journalist, beheaded by ISIS. And down at the border, more militias. Just a matter of time. Seems that they're the only one invading with guns, frankly, our border. All that and more on today's program. Let's start with some just some positive news. Little New York-centric, but again, every little bit helps. The organizers of the New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade announced today that they were lifting, and this is it's sort of stunning that we're actually having to deliver this story in 2014 as opposed to really 1993. They are lifting a ban on gay groups participating in the march. Prior to 2015, St. Patrick's Day, gay people were allowed to march in the parade. But unlike every other organization that is Irish in the tri-state area that marches in this parade, they could not identify themselves as belonging to a gay organization. The decision basically came as Mayor de Blasio threatened again not to participate in the parade. You will recall last year he was the first mayor in 20 years since Dinkins boycotted the parade in 93 to not participate in the parade because of this policy of saying that the gay people can't identify as gay if they're going to march in our parade. And it was also pressure, frankly, apparently from NBC, which covers the parade. So the parade committee said in a statement that out at NBC Universal, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender support group at NBC Universal will be the first group allowed to march under a banner identifying itself. And then in 2016, more groups will be allowed.
I like the name of the parade spokesman.
Bill O'Reilly. Yes, I think just a very, very fortunate coincidence. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to David Sirota. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program senior reporter with the International Business Times, David Sirota. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, David, you've been doing a series, particularly in the last couple of weeks of August, and this is a beat you've been chasing for a while, on these pay-to-play schemes that seem to be propping up, particularly with Christie, but they seem to be propping up in other places. Let's start in New Jersey, because the New Jersey press has taken real notice of your reporting, and it's creating quite a stir there, as far as I can tell. Tell us what's going on here with the New Jersey pensions.
Well, New Jersey has one of the largest pension systems in the country, one of the largest pools of capital in the world. It's about $80 billion. And since Governor Christie has taken office, there's been a shift in the investment strategy at the pension fund. His people in the administration have moved a large amount of pension money into so-called alternative investments. This is hedge funds, private equity, real estate, venture capital, very riskier investments, the theory being they could deliver potentially higher returns. They also cost more. They're high fee. They're much higher fees than, let's say, investing money in a stock index fund.
Well, hold on for 1 second. Where was sure. Who did the pension management, as it were, prior to Christie moving some of these funds out of these riskier investments?
Well, the New Jersey Pension Fund have more of its money in what's called fixed income assets, a lot of bonds. They certainly had stocks, stock index funds, and the like. And the idea at first, back in 2010, was that the state would boost its returns by putting money into hedge funds, private equity, venture capital, and the like. That was the thrust. And the New Jersey authorized to put more than a third of its entire pension fund into these investments. And we now have the results, or at least some of the results, of the strategy. What we know is that New Jersey, under Governor Christie, New Jersey is paying triple the fees to Wall Street that it had been paying before Christie came into office. About $250 million more every year now goes from New Jersey taxpayers to Wall Street, a total of $1 billion in just fees from the New Jersey pension system since Governor Christie took office.
A billion dollars in fees.
That's right. Now, the response to that is typically, well, you know, you pay more and you'll potentially get more. You know, you get what you pay for. That's the theory behind this. You pay higher fees to the smartest guys in the room on Wall Street, and they'll deliver better results than you'd get if you just dumped your money into a stock index fund. But what's ended up happening is that New Jersey's pension returns have actually not only trailed the overall market, the S&P, but New Jersey's returns have actually trailed the median public pension system across the country. In other words, in comparison to other states that have not spent those fees, New Jersey is actually trailing just the average median pension fund in the country. So higher fees for below average results.
And we should say, right, this is Christie just made an announcement, I guess maybe a couple of months ago, that because New Jersey's fiscal situation is so bad, they weren't going to pay into the pension for this year and next year. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, this is this is kind of three-dimensional chess here. So at the same time that the New Jersey pension system is paying higher fees and losing out on returns by delivering below average returns. And I should say, New Jersey would have almost $4 billion more in its pension fund had it simply met the median of all public pension funds. That's how much it's basically lost. So on top of all of that, then Christie is also citing pension shortfalls, which are, of course, exacerbated by the fees and by the underperformance. He's citing that those shortfalls to say we need to cut pension benefits. And he's saying, I can't even come up with the money in the annual budget to make the actuarially required payments from the state into the pension fund.
Wow. And so so that's that. I mean, what we're looking at there is just seemingly either a tremendous amount of incompetence or a real desire to raid the pension fund and to really just sort of put stress on the pension system just as a way of saying, like, look, this whole system's not sustainable after I've
Well,
done
that's right, although there's another motive here. I mean, the other part of the story, of course, is, well, what is the investment strategy really all about? And in politics, you have to look at the money coming into the politicians. And what we've discovered is that many of the firms, employees of many of the firms, the Wall Street firms that have gotten New Jersey pension money, hedge funds, private equity, and the like, many of the employees of those firms have made large campaign contributions to New Jersey Republican Party, Christie, the Christie-chaired Republican Governors Association, and the Republican National Committee, which has spent a lot of money in 2013 on Christie's reelection campaign. And those campaign contributions have come in chronologically proximate to pension contracts going out from the New Jersey pension system. Now, does it mean there was a direct quid pro quo? There's no evidence of that, at least not yet. But it does suggest that money is coming in to New Jersey politics from the same companies that are benefiting from Chris Christie's shift in investment strategy to give lucrative pension contracts to those same firms.
Give us a sense of, I mean, is this legal? Aren't there any protections for taxpayers, for, I guess, ultimately, too, those people who are ultimately receiving pensions or anticipating receiving pensions? Aren't there any statutory protections as to what the governor, who the governor can decide is going to manage this money? I mean, at one point, right, it's the State Investment Council was managing this. That it seems to be far more accountable than these private entities, which have not shown that they can have a return. But even still, I mean, aren't there any parameters as to how much you can gamble with this pension account? And let's be clear, the reason why you gamble with this and go for the long shots here is so that you don't have to put as much money into the account to keep it solvent.
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. There's two pieces to that. I mean, one, the New Jersey Pension State Investment Council cannot put in more than 38% into these investments. That's its cap. That's a lot. There are pay to play laws on the New Jersey books and at the federal level that they're supposed to restrict campaign contributions coming in from the firms doing business with the pension fund. The question is, will those be enforced? The Christie administration has already launched an investigation, of itself, over a $10,000 contribution made from a guy named Charlie Baker to the New Jersey Republican Party a few months before Charlie Baker's firm, General Catalyst, got a pension deal. Charlie Baker is the Republican nominee for governor in Massachusetts. There's an investigation supposedly going on after this all came to light. Your point about the long shot, though, I want to be clear. I mean, New Jersey publicly is now shifting its argument. It's saying, well, you know, hey, we didn't invest in alternative investments in order to get higher returns. They're saying that, of course, because the returns haven't been higher, they've been lower. Now they're saying the investment strategy was shifted to create more stability, less volatility. The problem with that argument is that when you put specifically the alternative investment portfolio's returns up against the stock market's returns or the S&P's returns, the S&P has delivered over 10 years far higher returns than New Jersey's alternative investment portfolio. So the whole notion that, well, okay, this is over the long term, we're trying to get stability here from the stock market. Well, over the long haul, the stock market has doubled the rate of return that New Jersey's own alternative investment portfolio has returned. And so then the question comes back to, well, why the investment strategy? You've got the campaign contributions. Maybe that's part of the answer. You've got the guy who runs the state investment council, is Christie's top economic advisor, who was a longtime partner at the Carlyle Group, who moonlights, if you can believe this. This is how it works in New Jersey. The man who runs the New Jersey State Investment Council moonlights as a private equity investor for another firm called Cheyenne Capital. So he is allowed to basically be investing in the private markets in his own private time, while also essentially controlling one of the largest pools of capital, public capital, in the United States. Maybe the psychology of, you know, you've got so many Wall Street guys who are driving the policy, who are literally in government positions while they're also in the financial world, that it's just a kind of a psychology that says we should just put our money into these kinds of investments.
It seems to me that there's a real opportunity for a conflict of interest there. I mean, if I am working, if I have the ability to control, what are we talking here? $80 billion of investments. I would imagine that I could actually increase the value of certain holdings. And so if I am also a private investor who is steering this money, I mean, it seems to me I have the ability to almost make a market in certain areas, right?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. You're absolutely right in general. When you're talking about this specific size of the amount of money at work here, you're absolutely right. And I mean, I think one of the things that in my reporting that I've, when I've talked to sources, they've said who aren't New Jersey specialists, they actually can't believe that New Jersey runs its pension system in a way that allows its state the people on its state investment council to simultaneously be making investment decisions and also be not just private kind of personal investors, but also be money managers,
right,
in their profession, in their other professional lives.
So people should understand here. Okay, we're talking about, here's this guy. He's got this. He's a private money manager, right? I don't know how many millions of dollars. Maybe it's billions. Maybe it's hundreds of millions. He's managing for his clients. Oh my gosh, this fund I'm in is not performing that well. I know how to increase the performance of this fund. I'm going to take the $80 billion I control of the state money, and I'm going to buy a significant portion of those holdings so my clients are protected. In fact, I would say he's the guy you want to sign up with your private money, because he's controlling another $80 billion of what is known as dumb money, because no one seems to be accountable except for this guy.
Well, and you're right. That's exactly how a lot of private money managers refer to pension money, as dumb money. And one of the most insidious parts of this, of course, is that when a pension fund invests in an alternative investment like a private equity firm or a hedge fund, and a private investor invests in that same private equity fund or that hedge fund, the terms of the deals in those arrangements are secret,
of course,
and they are they can be different. Meaning, the private investor can get different and/or better terms than the pension gets for itself. So when you have an investor who is simultaneously controlling a pension fund, one of the questions that comes up is, well, if that investor is then co-investing on a same investment in their personal lives as the pension fund, is that person getting themselves a better deal than the pension fund is getting? In other words, is the pension money actually being used to subsidize or even kick back?
It's a kickback.
Benefits.
It's called a kickback. I mean, that's basically what it is.
It certainly could. It certainly could be. And the thing is that the problem with this is, and I want to be clear, I'm not saying there's evidence of that in New Jersey, that direct evidence of that. There's certainly the potential for that. But the problem is, for a reporter, is that literally the New Jersey pension system and most public pension systems across the country, even though they're government entities, will keep the terms of their agreements, of the state's agreements with the Wall Street firms, they will keep it secret.
Wow. I mean, this is... It really is incredible. I mean, at the very least, I just don't understand. Like, you know, so where is there legislative oversight of this? I mean, who in New Jersey, aside from the reporting you've done and the responses you've gotten from what I've seen, at least numerous editorial boards and major newspapers in New Jersey saying, hey, wait a sec, how come no one's paying attention to what Sirota is writing? I mean, literally, I think they all start with, like, it's curious that David Sirota's reporting hasn't gotten more attention. Yeah, it seems real curious. Who is supposed to be in that state, and we should tell people that this is a dynamic that seems to be going on in multiple states across the country, but in New Jersey, is there anybody in, are there lawmakers saying, hey, we need to have a committee to sort of revisit this whole system of the way that we're doing our investing of these of this massive pension fund?
Well, certainly the legislature can open up hearings. They have oversight authority. Typically, in most states, the state attorney general can enforce any state pay-to-play rules and the like. The problem is in New Jersey. New Jersey is one of five states in which the attorney general is appointed by the governor rather than elected. And it gets even worse. New Jersey doesn't even have an appointed attorney general right now because the last attorney general left, so there's an acting attorney general who's not the real attorney general, and there's been questions about why Christie hasn't even appointed a new attorney general. You've got potentially the U.S. attorney, which is a federal position, and then there's also the SEC. But I will say, I mean, the fact that New Jersey doesn't have an independently elected attorney general, I mean, this, you could look at all of this as a cautionary tale for what happens in states that do not have independent law enforcement agencies.
And let's talk about the SEC, and I want to touch on what's happening in North Carolina as well. But the Republican Party sued the SEC, didn't they, on this issue?
Yes, they did. So the SEC in 2011 passed a rule saying if you're doing business with a public pension fund, and you're a senior executive at a firm, you can't give money to politicians who control the pension fund. And if you do, then you basically can't earn money off of the pension investments. You have to give back the money that you've earned. It's basically you can't give the money. The New York Republican Party and the Tennessee Republican Party filed a lawsuit in federal court saying that that is a violation of Wall Street money managers' First Amendment rights, that they have a First Amendment right effectively to give money to politicians who then return the favor with pension contracts. That's their case in court. Follows on the Citizens United argument, you know, First Amendment right essentially to corruption. And what's interesting about this for the presidential politics is this is not a coincidence that the Republican Party is pushing this. I mean, what was interesting was the New York Republican Party, actually, the spokesperson said, we need to be able to raise essentially Wall Street money. I mean, he came out and basically said that. But what this is really all about is not just the New York and Tennessee Republican Party. This is about the 2016 presidential race because many of the Republican Party's prospective candidates are governors, Bobby Jindal, Scott Walker, Chris Christie, Rick Perry. Right now, if they are sitting governors and they run for president, Under that SEC rule, they cannot raise money from the Wall Street firms doing business with their pension funds. And there's not just a few Wall Street firms who are doing business with those pension funds. That most major Wall Street firms are doing business with major state pension funds. So the Republican Party nationally probably sees the SEC rule as a huge problem for their fundraising needs in 2016, because if they end up nominating one of those governors and that SEC rule exists, how is the Republican Party going to raise that huge amount of money that both parties' presidential candidates rely on from Wall Street?
Right. All right. Well, let's turn to what's happening in North Carolina. And I am just absolutely shocked that Erskine Bowles would be involved in something like this. This is like his sort of template. When he goes around the country and says how we should be basically privatizing Social Security, which was his idea when he was a chief of staff or under Clinton, and many people think actually that had the Lewinsky affair not happened, the Clinton White House may have very well pushed for privatizing of Social Security. You get a nice insight as to why Erskine Bowles might think that's a good idea.
Well, the story of Erskine Bowles is, I mean, you're right to contextualize it in him being the proponent of cutting Social Security, because this is a story ultimately about retirement security. And the story is basically this. In North Carolina, there is something called an innovation fund that is supposed to invest locally in local entrepreneurs. What we've learned about a lot of these local funds that use pension money to invest locally is that between the pension fund investing the money and the money getting to local businesses, oftentimes financial firms get in the middle of that. So the pension fund will give money to a private equity firm, which will give money maybe to another private equity firm, which will finally give money, invest money in local business. Erskine Bowles co-founded a company, private equity firm, called Carousel Capital. He also is listed on their website very prominently as the senior advisor to the firm. In 2011, the North Carolina Innovation Fund was created. In July of 2011, it basically awarded a pension contract for investment to Carousel Capital, Erskine Bowles' firm. 2 weeks before awarding that pension that contract, there was a fundraiser at the home of Erskine Bowles and Crandall Bowles for North Carolina's state treasurer, Janet Cowell, who's also a Democrat, and she controls the pension fund. She's actually one of the few states in which one person singularly controls the pension fund. There's not a board of trustees. It's a sole control of the pension fund. And I should mention, Crandall Bowles is on the board of J.P. Morgan, which also does business with the North Carolina pension fund. So, in other words, the fundraiser happened, and then the pension contract went out to Erskine Bowles' firm. Now, in response to this, and by the way, this happened a couple months after the SEC passed its pay-to-play law, which is supposed to regulate and restrict this kind of thing. Bowles responded to our report about that, saying, "Oh, you know, I don't really work at Carousel Capital. I don't really have much connection to Carousel Capital." The state treasurer responded by saying that Bowles is not, and Crandall Bowles at J.P. Morgan are not covered associates under the SEC rule. A lot of parsing of a response. And what was interesting was that the largest public employee union in North Carolina filed a complaint with the SEC saying this all violates the SEC's pay-to-play rule. And they actually made an interesting side argument, which said, you know, Erskine Bowles saying that he's not involved in Carousel Capital might suggest that Carousel Capital is defrauding its own investors when they're boasting about Erskine Bowles being a senior advisor and intimately involved in the firm. So there's a lot going on. And the thing is, this just highlights how opaque all of these deals are and how much money is at stake, right? I mean, a source of mine said, and I said, why don't people cover pensions? Why is this, why so little attention? And he said, well, the one place that they pay a lot of attention to this stuff is on Wall Street. He said, Wall Street understands that even in small states, there are huge amounts of money, and it's basically money that is unguarded. And that's really one of the biggest economic stories right now, is the effort to grab as much of that unguarded money that's meant for retirees.
And we should also add that when you that one of the stories, and we haven't heard it as much as of late, but certainly over the past couple of years in the wake of the financial crisis, we hear over and over again that austerity measures must be implemented on the states because the states' pension funds are bankrupting the states, and we need to cut the pensions of firefighters and cops and teachers and sanitation workers and social workers, anybody working for the state, because these things are bankrupting themselves, but really they're getting fleeced.
Well, that's absolutely right, and I would put it another way, which is also that the state's pension fund has been used to bail out what the politicians have been wanting to do for the last 20 years to finance that stuff. So when the politicians don't make their required payments, I mean, think about it in an employment kind. If you have a 401k, it's like your employer saying that they're going to put in their contribution and then not putting in their contribution and using the contribution that they promised you for whatever they want to do. So for years, politicians have been financing tax cuts and corporate subsidies by not making the necessary annual contributions that they contractually agreed to. And then when the bill comes due, they're saying, oh, well, the pension fund is bankrupting our state. Actually, what's happened is that you've used the pension fund to bail out your spending priorities and not met those contractual obligations. And the North Carolina situation, I think, it's iconic because here you have a guy, Erskine Bowles, who ran around saying we can't afford Social Security, who is involved, or at least the firm that he's a senior advisor at, is involved in a deal to extract fees from North Carolina's pension system. In other words, he's the business that he co-founded and that he's a senior advisor at, the whole business is to extract fees on top of the investments made with people's retirement money. So at one level, he's saying cut Social Security. At another level, the firm that he's affiliated with, their whole business model is, and it's not, I'm not picking on them. I mean, that's the Wall Street private equity money manager industrial complex. Their whole business is to extract fees from people's retirements.
Well, that's exactly, I mean, first of all, that's very innovative. Let me just say that. But that's my point about Erskine Bowles going around talking about wanting to privatize Social Security, because he knows firsthand this is dumb money. And if we can get that in the hands of Wall Street, we're going to make a lot of cash. And what happens to it happens to it, but we're going to make a lot of cash in the meantime.
Well, here's a stat for you. I mean, a lot of people know the firm Blackstone, and Blackstone is run by Stephen Schwarzman. Just one example. Blackstone, the stat in the New York Times is $38 out of every $100 invested in Blackstone is public money, public pension money. So when one thing I think people miss in this whole debate when they think about Wall Street seems like the ultimate, I guess, to a lot of people, example of capitalism and sort of the private economy. There is a huge nexus between public money and that so-called private economy. And what we're really learning is that a huge amount of Wall Street is actually built on extracting fees from money that is public. That Wall Street is essentially a publicly subsidized system. It is not the bastion of so-called capitalism that it presents itself as. And that it's really a business model increasingly built on extracting fees from public money.
And I think, you know, framing in the context of the Wall Street complex, I mean, it is important because it is analogous in some respects to sort of, you know, the arms industry in some level. I mean, the public money is one of the biggest customers, essentially, for these people.
Yes, it's like in national security, it's called the Iron Triangle. I mean, it's the same thing. You've got public money going in to be invested in Wall Street. You've got campaign contributions that are spent on politicians. Basically, public money goes in. Wall Streeters generate big fees. They use a portion of those fees to pay the politicians to put even more money back into investing, more public money to be invested in Wall Street, and the cycle goes on and on. Although I will say this, I do think that what is exciting about this time is that this has been a trend that's been going on for a long time without any scrutiny at all. And I think that Christie's his profile and the kind of brazen way that he has embraced all of this, I think has raised the profile of this scheme to the level where I think more and more people are saying, hey, wait a minute. What is really going on here? And is what's going on here really in the fiduciary interests of retirees, or is there something more nefarious going on? So I'm actually optimistic that slowly but surely people are becoming aware that when they hear in the political debate the term pension, it doesn't mean public workers bankrupting society. What it's increasingly meaning is Wall Streeters figuring out how to make huge money off of the retirement nest eggs of ordinary people who need those nest eggs and who earned those nest eggs.
And do you have a sense of I mean, what this trend has been like? I mean, and in other words, have we seen how has this developed over the years? I wonder just sort of. How much more vanilla pension funds were in terms of their investments 20, 30, 40 years ago? Do you have any sense
of that? Yeah, we do. Yeah, 20 years ago, about 7% of all retirement pension assets were in so-called alternative investments. That's the average. Today, it's roughly 25%.
Wow.
New Jersey is actually really illustrative of this. In 2005, New Jersey had almost zero investments in alternative investments. Today, New Jersey, depending on how you count the numbers, New Jersey has between 26%. It has 26% right now. It has 38% of its pension fund committed. That is obligated to. Some of it hasn't been spent yet. And is number two in the nation in terms of hedge funds. And this is expected to grow. As I said, there's reason to be optimistic. I mean, Warren Buffett, who I've got some problems with on a bunch of policy issues, but Warren Buffett's probably a pretty smart investor. Warren Buffett was asked by the San Francisco Pension Fund a couple months ago. They said, hey, listen, we've got this proposal to put all this money in private equity and hedge funds. What do you think? He wrote them a letter back saying, I think you shouldn't do that. I think that's a huge mistake. You should put most of your money in stock index funds and some of it in fixed income bonds and not pay those high fees. And there's this famous bet that Warren Buffett has had with a hedge fund manager saying, I bet if I put my money in a stock index fund, it will beat out your returns from your hedge fund and the hedge fund industry in general over the course of 10 or 15 years. And so far, I think they're in year 9, and Warren Buffett is his bet is destroying the hedge funders. So it's all a reminder that what's really going on here is the money managers come in and they say we've got these great schemes, these sophisticated schemes that will beat the market. But so far, the data suggests that you can't beat the market with over the long haul.
Well, David, thanks so much for talking to us about this. Your reporting on this has been stellar, and to the extent that that people are having a higher consciousness of this, a lot of it has to do with the work you've been doing on this, and not just with these series, but I know you've been on this for a couple of years now, and I appreciate your coming on and talking about it.
Thanks so much. Anytime. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
All right, folks. We should also say, I mean, now that we're talking about Chris Christie, the Revel Casino Hotel, which back in, now, this is a long time ago for people, so you got to put your memory caps on. Back in 2012, that's almost in April of 2012, it's almost 2.5 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. Governor Chris Christie christened the opening of the Revel Casino Hotel and labeled it a game changer for Atlantic City. And apparently it did not change the game. It just lost the game. It closed today. $2.4 billion invested, and it just went down the tubes. Yesterday at 6 a.m. in the morning. 5,000 jobs disappearing within 24 hours between the Revel and the Showboat. State regulators yesterday also gave the go-ahead for the closure of the Trump Plaza in about 2 weeks from now. The thing about the Revel is that 2.5 years ago, when Governor Chris Christie, hot off of calling teachers the biggest problem in New Jersey and saying they're bankrupting us, and also refusing to take federal money to create another tunnel under the Hudson River, provided a guaranteed $261 million in tax incentives to Revel, because this was a game changer, man. And so that $261 million now in tax expenditures gone bye-bye. So there you have it. $260 million flushed down the toilet by Chris Christie. Now, to be fair, it's quite possible that he had a lot of donors who come from the gaming industry. And
maybe.
So maybe it paid off for him.
Maybe it was a game changer for them.
That's right.
Why don't you broaden your scope a little bit, Sam? See, if you were a bold, no-nonsense leader
I'm
like Chris
so
Christie.
I'm being so narrow in perceiving what the game is that maybe I don't realize the game did change for Christie.
Maybe you need to wake up and stop worrying about people's jobs so much and look at campaign contributors and where they're at. And presidential ambitions of certain New Jersey governors.
The myopia that Cedar
is unbelievable.
So that's the Chris Christie docket.
Social security and jobs for real people. Blah, blah, blah. You got to get your head in the game, man.
I know. All right, folks. Just a reminder that it's a game changer every time one of you become a member of the majority.
Except
report.
It actually is. It actually
Except
is.
That, oh, yes, it actually that is. One is. Yes.
You can be. We, you know what we should do is like we should get game change majority report majority.fm as a redirect URL. Game change it. Folks, you want to change the game? How about becoming a Majority Report member right now? Change the game. If you can afford to, please. It is your support that keeps this show alive day in, day out. Majority.fm or MajorityReportRadio.com. I am going to get a URL, like Majority Report member. And that's what I'm going to do after the show. Remind me, please. Now somebody's going to go out and get it, and I'm going to have to pay them. Well, then maybe I'll get Majority Report member game changer. I gotcha. All right.
You never know which one Sam has.
You never know. Maybe I have a third one I'm not even thinking about. Chris Christie, Majority Report member.
Be a Christie. A whole other membership level right there.
Well, a whole new membership level. We get a Chris Christie membership level, and that would be... You become a member.
Yes.
Then we kick back money to you. if you become the Chris Christie membership is this. If you control the finances of the company you're working for and buy a Chris Christie membership, which of course is $5,000 a month,
yep.
We kick back to you $2,500 a month. So you just use your company funds to buy a Chris Christie membership, that's $5,000. Then we kick back to you $2,500, and we'll just call
it. We'll put
it
in an offshore account for you.
We'll just write it down as like the business expense will be like marketing. Or something like that.
And we will, maybe we could literally get Guy Lawson to have us have like a conference call with Sam Israel in prison. He can help us set up the details
right.
of it. All the transactions will work. And we'll all just become this great like hall of mirrors.
We're doing
the majority
that.
Report
we're doing the Chris Christie membership. We're going to do that. It's you basically, you spend $5,000 of your company's money. We kick it back to you $2,500. It's win-win.
Communications and outreach.
That's right.
What? Who doesn't need to do that?
Exactly. Are you kidding?
Community engagement.
That's right. They have a website, and we read it every day. That's called a periodical, as far as I'm concerned. All right, folks, you can also support this program if you buy crap from Amazon. Speaking of kickback, buy crap from Amazon through our link at majoritycickback.com. You notice no difference, but we get a kickback. That's what it's all about, man. This show is all going 100% revenue by kickbacks. That's the way we're going. That's going to be our innovation for 2015. We're going to come up with a kickback scheme for every single one of you.
And we're going places.
It's going to be huge. I am so excited for the day that we have a state attorney general bust down the doors of this office.
One can only hope.
One can only hope. We have so many kickbacks going on. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Get the Majority Report blend. Even though they are an employee-owned company and providing all the people involved in the supply chain a fair wage, we still can do a kickback situation there. Yeah. You use the coupon code MAJORITY, you get 10% off, we get a kickback every time you use it.
We can still make that situation unethical somehow.
No.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
We're going to do this. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of this program. Hey, folks, give us a review on iTunes, will you? Come on. We got like 4 in the last 2 months. Is it really only 4 of you that appreciate the show enough to give us a review on iTunes? Get your cousin to sign up, or your brother, or your sister. Or your dad, or your mom. We should work out some type of kickback program for that, too. 646-257-3920, or you can IM me through the app, or through AIM at Majority FM. The app is One Touch. You can get the app at majorityapp.com. Back in a second. Only a brother to me. She's a pretty little doll who says no, 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 no. Just a little doll, and she knows I love her so. If I ask her to walk with me, shakes her head. Ask her to walk.
know.